Hey, resilient recruiters, here's reason number two why you must attend the Recruitment Coach Live Summit in London this September. And that is the keynote presentations. You'll gain exclusive insights from other top billing recruiters and entrepreneurs who've either scaled their own desk or built multi-seven-figure businesses. I myself will, of course, be one of the speakers, but the presentations that I am the most excited about are not professional speakers and trainers, but other recruitment business owners like you who will be unpacking their most effective tactics and strategies. No theory, just practical insights from people who are in the trenches, ordinary people achieving extraordinary results. There's still time to take advantage of the early bird pricing. By the way, it's happening on September 17th and 18th. So don't miss out. Reserve your place now at recruitmentcoach.com/summit. Hello and welcome to the Resilient Recruiter Podcast. This is your host, Mark Whitby, and I'm very happy to be joined today by Lauren Steibing. Lauren is the founder of LS International, based in Barcelona. She's built a highly successful executive search firm with clients around the world in the CPG and FMCG industry. She recruits for companies like Mattel, Revlon, Danone, Puma, Carlsberg, to name but a few. I have known Lauren since 2015, and I'm so impressed with what she's accomplished. This is her second appearance on the show, actually. The last time was pre-pandemic. It was February 2020, exactly 2 years ago. So if you've not heard that interview, definitely check it out. That episode was one of her most popular. It was called How to Build Your Personal Brand as a Recruiter. And hard to believe that was episode number 10. We've now obviously over 100 episodes. So that was a long time ago. And so because of the popularity of that episode, I was really keen to bring Lauren back for round two. Lauren is actually a podcaster herself. She's done over 60 episodes of her own show, the LS International Career Success Podcast. And she's also a mentor within our Inner Circle coaching program, where she shares her insights on digital marketing, personal branding, and some of the other secrets to her success. Her talks are extremely popular with our members because she's just such a genuine person, very transparent about her mistakes and the lessons she's learned, and just brings that humility, even though she's one of the most driven and accomplished people that I know. So Lauren, welcome. Thank you so much for coming back.
Thank you, Mark. It's good to be back. And I think you're probably an expert now, having done number 10, now over 100. I know these things get easier and easier. So congrats for sticking with it as well.
Well, thank you. The funny thing is, I'd love to know how you feel on this, because people might not realize that I still get nervous right before recording this show. Not with you. I'm very comfortable because we've known each other for a long time and we keep in touch. But, you know, I get right before, if it's someone I don't know, and once the conversation flows, I relax. And that's one of the reasons I kind of script that opening part. The rest of the conversation is not scripted. It's just kind of free flowing. But I find that prompt just gives me the security or peace of mind. How about you? Do you ever get nervous?
Yeah, interviewing? Of course. And it's also, you know, some of the guests that I have, I've been trying to get them on the podcast for years. So we were doing, at one point we were doing them bi-monthly, then monthly. And now, since we do a lot of other types of content, I'm doing them only every other month. But some of these guests, so I'm only doing six a year now, but some of them I've been targeting for years. So of course, if I finally get the sign up and then maybe they cancel and the rebookings and everything, then it's finally the day. Yeah, it is a bit nerve-wracking.
So Lauren, what I would love to know, so like 2 years ago was last time we did this.
Yeah.
And it was immediately before things kicked off, and you were like really riding a wave of like success. You were totally smashing it. You were closing in on seven figures. You were starting to grow a team. You were winning retainers with, you know, blue chip multinationals. And then the next month, like the whole world turned upside down. Could you kind of like share the milestones, like what's been happening in the last 2 years at LS International?
Sure. So yeah, I think in March 2020, a lot of things changed. So our business, almost all of it, went on hold from March to at least June, July time. And of course, you're trying to think of, as a business owner, what's the best way to get business back? Is there any business? Then you realize there wasn't any business, because a lot of times you think, oh, the competitors are, they're getting all of the business. And then you realize, no, there wasn't really any business happening at that stage, within those industries. So I think in consumer goods and retail, luckily they sell in supermarkets. So when everything shut down for COVID, they were still selling, but it wasn't a time where they were going to hire new people. They just wanted to keep things settled how they were and keep business running, during that time. So, basically, we did, of course, have some business each month after that, but just not the wave that we were having previously. So I really thought, okay, if we can't sell this service, which was the only service that we had, how can we offer other services to our clients? And just started brainstorming on how to best use this time with my team. I didn't want to furlough anyone, because I felt like there's always things to do. In a small business, there are always things to do. So let's use their creativity, let's use their skill set, and let's all brainstorm together of how we can offer other services to our clients while we ride out this wave for, I didn't really know how long it was going to be, and I think we can all agree it was longer than what we assumed. I can say, so I can go into a bit of detail into like what that looked like, but I would say as of the end of last year, as of Q4 2021, things are back at where they were in 2019. So overall, I would say a small period of not so good times, and a small period of negative growth or no growth, to now being back to 2019 levels is from a search
Brilliant.
perspective.
Okay, amazing. So yeah, I'd love to hear your solutions, the creative ideas you guys came up with in order to recover and still do business when there was no searches available. Before we do though, how do you remember how you felt like when all of a sudden you were used to this regular business and it just completely dried up? Like, what was going through your mind at that stage?
A bit of panic. So,
Yeah.
the
Okay.
thing is that in retained, like high-level executive search that we do, it's not that you have a big volume. So there could be months where you don't get any new business. And the time it takes for the, let's say we have a very fast delivery. But then, of course, the client has multiple interviews, up to six, seven interviews, all these things. So it can take time, and it's not that every single month, every consultant gets a new role. So in the beginning, I would say March, April, it was kind of okay. I wasn't really in a panic stage. It was more by the time summer hit. No, I would probably say in September, November time was the most stressful because, yeah, when summer hit, summer's always a little bit of a downtime anyway. And then Q4 is always an explosion. So when we got to Q4 2020 and nothing was happening, I think that's when kind of panic, a bit of panic set in. And yeah, I mean, there wasn't any, I would say from a cash flow perspective, we had cash flow from 2019. So it wasn't a panic of, hey, are we going to be able to pay the bills? Are we going to be able to pay the employees? That was fine. It was more, it was my first downturn in recruitment, which now I know that there are downturns in recruitment. But I was thinking, is the recruitment business gone? Will it ever come back? Like that was really my thought process of like, hey, maybe I need to change industries and do something else. Because yeah, maybe recruitment is never coming back. That's really what I thought.
Wow. And well, first of all, congratulations on, surviving your first downturn
Thank you.
and joining the club. Welcome. It's there's a couple of things you said that I want to pick up on, but for sure, once you've been through that, it really will you will find it really gives you much more confidence and certainty about the future because well, we can get through that. And we're still okay. So, it really does. I think you're not a really seasoned business owner until you've experienced something like that. And so now, you know, you're going to be the one who's mentoring others whose first crisis is coming along. Employees, potentially like recruiters who've never seen, you know, if they join in a boom market where there's tons of demand like there is right now, and that's their first experience of recruitment, and they just assume like this is what it's always like, then you'll be able to coach them in the future when the next time around. So I was a recruiter during the dot-com bubble bursting. That wasn't a major thing, but I'd made like 7 or 8 placements with this one, you know, online business who then didn't get their next round of funding, and they went under and they didn't pay their bill. So that wasn't fun. Okay. And then I started my business 10 days before September 11th, which then all of a sudden, you know, was super scary for so many reasons. But then 2008 was when that was the worst. That was like, I almost went under and I basically didn't pay myself for a long time and survived on credit cards, which is not good because then that's a snowball, which took a few years to, you know, climb back out of. So this time around, it was like definitely February and March. I was like, uh-oh, this isn't good. But I was able to stay a lot more calm, not to panic, and to make good decisions that I think were ultimately beneficial. So that was a long, too much of me talking, Lauren. So coming back to you, you mentioned that you and the team really started getting creative and thinking about, okay, what else could we do here in order to drive revenue? So what did you come up with?
Yeah, so I think just a kind of precursor to that, as I was building Ellis International, of course, when anyone starts their own business, a new business, they have ideas of how they want to do it differently. And I definitely had those ideas. But I think, you know, ideas need to be validated. So from the very beginning, I was testing and learning, trying new things. You met me quite early on. I think I was only 5 months into the business. It was your idea, Lauren, give the podcast a try. Okay. So I want to say, like, through the past 6.5 years, almost 7 years that we've started, it's always been my way of working, how I like to work, and what I think works is really this kind of test and learn, always having innovative ideas. How can we improve this, improve that? And so for me, when the business just stopped, that's what I went back to. So it's really, I think, always analyzing the market, analyzing what's happening. When you see a gap or a need to really create a minimum viable product, and see how the client reacts or how candidates react to whatever you're creating. So I had basically, during these years, was hired a lot to bring in diverse talent, specifically gender diverse talent, which I think in most companies was the first real focus in diversity over the past 10 years. So I really saw an area of talent development where, you know, female talent, they had a lot of great female talent at lower levels, but not really at more senior levels. And it was saying, okay, how can we help these female talent? What can we provide to them to really get them to the next level, to get them to be visible within their organization, to have their challenges heard, to make sure the culture and the environment is a good working environment for them, et cetera, et cetera. So that they don't, I was actually trying to put myself a little bit out of business in search, not to have me bring in a female at senior director or vice president level, but to grow their own talent, which is what they were doing usually, but not really focusing on gender diverse talent. So yes, I thought of a program, a talent development program, to really give support to female talents within organizations by providing them senior executive mentorship from my network. And as we started the program, to be honest, there was no program created. That's the minimum viable product. There was no program created. We made a couple of documents, a couple of basically marketing material, a brochure, a landing page on a website, and did a video. So, well, first a sales letter and a video sales letter, which I can go into a bit more detail about later. And said, let's see if this resonates with people, if this resonates with companies, with mentors, with mentees, if people would be interested in this. And our goal was I also partnered with an individual here in Barcelona as well that has learning and development experience, so that when they did say go, we had the capabilities to actually build the program, as of course my background is all in executive search. So our goal was to sell 10 programs in year one. We ended up selling at the end of year one, 27, almost 30 programs.
Wow.
And we sold 17 Amazing. Of them in January. So once our goal was 10 and we sold 17, we were like, okay, product is validated. Let's go. Let's build everything that we need around that. And that's, for me, really fun as well. I'm a type of person that really loves to do these things. And I think it's great to always be looking at these types of solutions for clients and bringing in, I would say, yeah, new and innovative ideas and solutions for them that can really help their organization as well.
Amazing. There's so many cool things about that, Lauren, but it seems to me a lot of people get, if you've been doing this business for a while, you can kind of get stale and go into, if you're not trying new things and being creative and really pushing yourself outside your comfort zone, there's a real risk of burning out, just because it is a hard job. It's stressful, but it's also monotonous and kind of at the same time. So it's stressful yeah. and kind of can be monotonous. So then that's what leads to burnout. But in your business, you're always trying new things, and you know, it makes it interesting and exciting, I think, as well. So could you, for people who aren't from a software background, can you explain what an MVP is?
Yeah. So a minimum viable product, it's just basically creating the minimum product to then validate your idea. So it doesn't need to be, let me give you an example that is a technology example, and then I can relate it to my example. But a technology example is saying that, yes, with our machine learning tool, you can do X. The point is, they first, instead of creating the entire tool, they first do it manually to see if people would buy it, and then they build the tool. And it was the same with this. So instead of creating an entire talent development program before knowing if anyone's going to buy it, just have an outline, see if people resonate with the idea. Then when you sell it, you actually create everything. So it's a, let's say, cheaper way to do things, and not to waste your time building a bunch of programs, services, products that in the end people don't want actually.
Beautiful. I think that's such an important concept, because one thing that I find stops people, and I put my hand up here, I'm one of those people, is paralysis by analysis. And yeah. like feeling like I spend so long thinking about an idea and planning it and so on, that it takes me a long time to get it actually launched. And then if it's not what the market wants, then all that time is wasted, and you could have been on to your third or fourth idea by that stage. That's one of the good things about Leanne and my team, is a real, like, she gets shit done and makes things happen. And so it's a good collaboration, because she overrides that tendency that I have, which is procrastinate through perfectionism. So I love the MVP concept. And you found an L&D professional to collaborate
yes.
with.
Yeah.
I love the thought process behind it of providing mentoring and development for female executives to help them progress and create more diversity in senior positions within your clients. It's such a fantastic idea. You might remember back in episode 43, I talked to Plamen Ivanov, the executive chairman of iIntro. If you missed it, it's well worth going back into the archives and having a listen. One of the things we talked about was a way for recruiters to shift the conversation with prospects away from fees and make it all about value. iIntro has created a tool called the Bad Hire Calculator that you can show to your prospects that proves to them that your recruitment service will save them potentially hundreds of thousands of dollars. When you can do that, the exact fees you charge almost become immaterial, because you've proved that you will save the client the most money in the long run. If you'd like to add this tool to your arsenal, you'd be pleased to know that I've partnered with iIntro, and they're offering a 25% discount to listeners of the Resilient Recruiter podcast. All you have to do to claim this discount is book a free consultation and mention my name or this podcast. Just go to recruitmentcoach.com/retained, follow the instructions, and iIntro will take care of the rest. That's recruitmentcoach.com/retained. What happened from there?
Yeah, so the program, we started the program off, we built the program. To be honest, the program went super, super well. I didn't expect, because it's a first program, I've never done this. The consultant that I worked with has never done it. There was a 100% match. So all of the mentees and mentors stayed together. So that was great. Wow. We thought maybe in the beginning there wouldn't be a match there. We use a couple of tools to do the matching, as well as psychometric assessment that supports not just having interviews, but also using the data to do the matching as well. Everyone through the program, super positive. Mentees, we have some mentee testimonials, mentor testimonials on our website in case anyone's interested. But they really got a lot out of it. Built confidence, were able to really see a different perspective, a different way of learning. I think that it's gone really well. I will say this, that the expectation was 10, we did 27. That doesn't mean that next year the expectation is 100. It's still a small business. We're still new in talent development. So we do want to scale this, and we see the need. But as well, I would say to everyone, don't set your expectations too high. Even if things do go really well in year one, that's fantastic. Just keep building on it, keep building on it. And I'm very much into building something solid. I don't think it's good either to just keep releasing all these different kinds of services, have them, then don't have them. And you also have to keep that in mind for your brand of what you're releasing. If you're going to go for it, put the investment in it and go for it for the mid to long term, I would say.
Absolutely. No, that makes sense. What is amazing about this is that not only did you create a business which wasn't reliant on the hiring cycles in a business, right? And which search is, obviously, yeah. if a department like a marketing department or a business is expanding into new areas, then there's going to be hiring demand. But in a downturn or like the pandemic, then that was flat, if not shrinking. And so you almost have two service lines which are very complementary, but they're not driven by the same economic forces. So they're uncoupled, I think is the word I'm looking for. So you could have one that's up and the other one's down, or vice versa. It's really, really smart, Lauren. I love what you're doing there.
Yeah. I think from the perspective, something that all recruiters do really well is build networks. And I think it's also important for everyone to step back, look at their network, and think about creating partnerships. So usually, a lot of people that can also help to build these services. I didn't have the expertise, but you need to keep an eye out for people that do, and then connect the two. And I think even after, you build these partnerships, I'm very much into, also creating partnerships with other recruiters. If I have an amazing service and they want to offer my service, obviously not the search service, but the mentoring service to their clients, I think that's how the industry will grow in the future, is more collaboration, more partnerships. And whether it be the ones that you have on your own or partnerships amongst recruiters as well. I think that that's also important to keep in mind, how you can build partnerships, build these services, but also within your own industry.
That's a fantastic idea, to partner with other recruiters because you've already gone through the painful and difficult process of building this program, which took months and months and a lot of investment. So that would be cool if other recruiters were able to offer that mentoring service. So if you're interested in that, definitely reach out to Lauren, check out her LinkedIn profile and reach out to her. So that was a major initiative. You also mentioned a few things that you kind of skimmed over. I'd like to go back to. One was the marketing behind it that you put together. You mentioned video sales letter, stuff like that. Could you explain that in a little more detail?
Yes. So first you have to write the sales letter. We actually partnered with a consultancy firm that taught us and my team how to do that. But basically, it's a way of marketing that you use through teaching, if we can say that. So all of these how-to videos, you basically sell through teaching, if we can say that. So first you write the sales letter in a document, then the video sales letter is just doing the video of the actual sales letter. And basically I did a recording. I can send you some examples through that the others can see, but basically I did that recording. I put it on a landing page, and instead of me physically having all of these calls, the video sales letter is supposed to sell for you, or at least sell and do part of the process for you. So a lot of people can do it in a webinar format. It doesn't need to be recorded. It can be a webinar format as well. And basically we did that recording and then did outreach via email. So we emailed this to our network, also built our network more within talent development or diversity and inclusion, and then shared this how-to video with them.
All right. There's a lot to unpack there, because it's so first of all, you said selling through teaching. I think that's a really key concept that people need to understand, that it's a fantastic way of getting people into your funnel. Is you have to offer something of value that they're going to learn something, not just invite them to a sales pitch, right?
Yes.
Because then people are less interested in that. But if you can share like something on how to increase diversity and gender balance in your senior leadership team, for example, that is a topic people are interested in, and that's going to get people to your, whether it's a webinar or a video presentation, because there's a clear benefit or something valuable they will learn by watching that, right? And
yes,
then it gives you the opportunity to explain how your service would enable them to achieve that more easily than they could just do it on their by themselves, right? So it's
correct,
really clever. I also think, you know, the writing sales letters is kind of a lost art. It's not fashionable. And when I don't think I've ever told you this, before I became a recruiter, I thought I wanted to be a copywriter.
Okay.
And I wasn't good enough, and I couldn't create to a deadline. That was the hard part. But I actually studied direct response copywriting.
Okay.
And I went around to direct marketing agencies here in Scotland and, you know, said, I want to be a copywriter. And they said, okay, here's a brief, go and see what you can come up with. Come back on Monday with your writing. And that's when I realized I couldn't do it. But you know, writing a sales letter is such a good discipline for selling anything.
Yeah.
Because you need to come up with like a headline, which is like what's going to hook people and get their attention. You need to really think about what are the problems that this service solves? What are the benefits that we deliver? How can we prove, or what evidence can we, you know, share that proves that this benefit is going to be realized by the client? And, you know, what would be a close or a call to action that progresses them to the next step? So if you think of the structure of a sales letter, I don't even know if people know what we mean by a sales letter, but imagine you were going to sell your service by sending someone a letter in the mail, which is, you know, a lot of services used to be sold that way in products. And if you had to do it that way, what would you write in that letter? And I used to study these like 10 or 20 page sales letters that like used to be used to sell financial newsletters and other different products. Which was really useful for learning how to sell and how to market.
Definitely.
So the video sales letter seems like it's the kind of next generation of that. People don't send these 20-page letters anymore. At least I don't think they do. But if you do a video, it's a lot – people don't want to scroll as well. They don't want to scroll for like a long web page. But they might watch that same information in the form of a video, right?
Yeah, but what I would say, yes, no, definitely, it comes from exactly what you studied. So this is very old. Nothing that I'm saying, the sales letter isn't anything new. It's basically, yes, the video sales letter is the new age. I never studied any marketing at all. I had never heard of this concept. And when we were going through this training, it seemed all very odd to me. And especially for me, who I'm selling on the phone. So I sell through my verbal communication.
Yes.
I like reading. I like reading books. But I was thinking a letter of 10 pages, like who would read that? And they said, no, if you're interested, you will read it. And I was like, I'll give it a try. But it's true. If you find the right client, and of course, it needs to be well written, but if you've hit a nerve with them and they need help in that area, they will read a 20-page document. So, of course, it needs to have some visuals and it can't just be all text. But like you can see some of these internet marketeers, they just post these very long posts. That's small sales letters or even a whole sales letter there. So it comes from the same concept. And the reason why the video is created is yes, this day and age, some people don't like to read. So you put it in video and you put it on a page. So it's always good to have the text and the video. That's the ideal because some
Got
people
it.
don't want the video, some people want the text. So if you think about it, if you have like just audio format, video and text, probably that's a good idea. But yeah, some people prefer to read and they want to see it on screen. So that's what a lot of the landing pages with text, they're actually just sales letters.
Got it. Well, what I think the reason you've made this work is because if it was purely sort of sales copy, that's a lot for people to read. But the fact that you're also teaching at the same time and revealing like how you've been able to get a particular result, or like you're educating at the same time, then that will get somebody to read that information as well. So it's brilliant. We should probably explain landing pages in case people don't know what that is. What's your understanding of a landing page?
So a landing page. Basically, well, there are various different types of landing pages, but my understanding of a landing page is that it's a page where people go to and it should provide them to an action that you're looking for. So the landing page is to sell and then provide the action, whether that action be to actually buy something on your website, or if the action in most cases with recruiters is to actually book a call. And I think the same with you, Mark. So, your call to action is to book a call. And it's the same for us. So the landing page as well, this is where I don't have it in completely clear, but I know that the landing page that we were putting people to with this sales letter and video sales letter, you don't want them to be able to go anywhere else. So you want them to land on the page, and the only thing they can do is go through your funnel. Whereas if you go to a website, technically the home page of a website, I think is also a landing page, but considering that they can click other things, I'm not exactly sure. So I would say the
Yeah,
main
no,
goal of the landing
you've got
page,
it.
I think, is that they can't go anywhere else and they complete your funnel. And the others is just a website, I guess.
Absolutely, absolutely. So, an example of a landing page would be when you go to register for a webinar, like if you come to one of my webinars, or there's lots of webinars happening more and more these days. When you go to that registration page, the only thing you can do is sign up. Like the only decision is, do I want to sign up for the webinar or not? There's not all kinds of other links going to different services and different products. That is the only thing that page is about. And so if you send someone to your homepage to find out about how to work with you, then there's so many navigational options there that they're not necessarily going to take your next action that you want them to take to book a call or what have you. So you're just directing people to a very specific page within your website, which is stripped back of all the other content. And it's really just all about that one thing that you want them to do.
And if you create a minimum viable product, so imagine that Ellis International didn't even exist and I wanted to create it. What I would do now, which is what I didn't do in the past, is you just create one landing page and the only thing they can do is book a call. Like there's really no reason to create 25, 30 pages about all these things when you're a new business. It doesn't make sense. You just create one landing page to actually do what you're going to do. And then as you start billing, as you start growing your business, you can add these other pages. And I think even more, especially in recruitment, everyone knows what recruitment is. It's not like a new software as a service. It's not a new product. You don't really need a big website. You can just have one landing page that allows people, the client, to book a call or candidates to book a call.
That's good advice. Absolutely. If you're starting a new business, like people, you have to have a website.
Yeah, you have to have a website. Just make it, yeah, just make one it page. One page.
Yeah. Good. Absolutely. So you've done a phenomenal job, Lauren, of like really honing your marketing. You've like the website's fantastic. You've got these landing pages. You've got the your salesmanship in those sales pages is excellent. And the videos are really good. So looking back over that whole process, what were the kind of main learnings for you?
Good question. I think that I would say I was quite hesitant to, like, you know, getting yourself out of your comfort zone. And then I have to do this completely new thing. I don't really love writing at all, as most recruiters, I don't think we do, maybe some do, but I love being on the phone. I love communicating. So I think the whole process of writing, then recording, I hadn't done, like, even though I had done the podcast, this was a whole nother thing because I needed to be on video. It was a complete monologue. There was no one to communicate with. It was just me. That was really hard, but I don't regret it at all. I think, like, pushing myself out of my comfort zone, it was super uncomfortable, but it really allows you, and especially it was at a really interesting point because it was during COVID and now everything's on video. So I kind of had this like speed course of how to kind of convince people via video, which I wouldn't have had if I didn't do that whole process. So I think, yeah, the biggest learning is, yeah, things are always going to feel uncomfortable. And I do push myself out of my comfort zone. Like I had the idea to do this new program and to create it and to build something. But sometimes there are small pieces along the way that are really uncomfortable that sometimes I feel like if you start analyzing too much, you'll say, no, let's not do this. Like, let's just put this on hold. I'm not interested. So I would say the biggest learning is just like to keep going, know that it's going to be uncomfortable, and also pay close attention to what the market is saying. So I'll give you an example. When we launched, it was a female mentorship program. I realized probably after about a month that a lot of the big companies wouldn't buy it only for females. So because the market had shifted and it was all about inclusivity, offering something only to females was not inclusive to everyone. So I think it's also, don't be too stuck on your original idea. It's very important to make sure you're listening to the market. That's what the minimum viable product is for. Listen to the market and shift based on what your clients are telling you. Don't be so stuck on one thing, the thing you originally created.
Great advice. That is really, really good insight, Lauren. What you're saying about comfort zone, I'm going to give a shout out to Larry Weinberg here, who's someone I've been talking to. Hopefully he's going to come on the podcast sooner or later. But in his email signature, he's got a quote from John F. Kennedy, and it's, "There are risks and costs to a program of action, but they are far less than the long-range risks and costs of comfortable inaction." Mm-hmm. I thought that was a good one. And the other thing you said is the good thing about these videos or webinars is that it does part of the sales process for you so that the people who book a call are already warm. Mm-hmm. And so Larry is an example of someone who came to me via the podcast. And because he'd already heard these interviews that, you know, that I'm doing, and he already, that's what I find with the podcast or when you do a webinar is people feel comfortable with you and they already trust you and they feel like they already know you. So it's not like you're trying to sell someone cold on your, you know, on working with you. So I think it's brilliant.
Yeah, it builds rapport, and also it kind of builds this, I wouldn't go as far as to say celebrity, but a little bit. Even if you're on screen, it's kind of like the new age TV, if that makes sense. So when people do see you, all the time on different videos, on different webinars, and in ads or wherever it is. And then they're actually in front of you. They feel like, oh, I'm speaking to the expert now. And that's
Right,
something that
the Lauren Steibing.
I didn't realize before, but it is true. It creates a bit more of rapport that when they actually get there, I don't need to tell them about my background, about what I've done, because they've seen a lot of that already.
Exactly. I just want to emphasize how powerful this is, because how does Lauren Steibing, who's a micro business, really, boutique search firm, win retained executive search against big established, global search businesses? This is a leveler, like you level the playing field through your brand, your visibility, your marketing, your podcast, your videos, so that, people have heard of you and you are pitching in the same, with really big companies. I think it's phenomenal.
Yeah, and I think for all of our consultants that we hire, that's our unique proposition that we can offer to employees is that, we will help you build your brand, even if you're not an expert in selling retained executive search. It's hard pitching to vice presidents, presidents, and you really need to be at a certain level. And we really help them build that and, be able to offer that to clients since we've done it already. We've done the test and learn and understand what works and really just always continuously bringing the right talent in and showing them how to do it as well.
Let me ask you this, just occurred to me, because I've had guests on the show before who are in retained executive search, and I talked to them about like hiring, junior, I don't mean junior, but less experienced recruiters and
Sure.
developing them. And I remember having this conversation with Chris Shuttlecarte. And he's a really successful executive recruiter in the States. And he had a PE background before that. And he was already mature when he started his search business.
Okay.
And he was questioning whether a younger person with less business experience would have the credibility to be able to sell to, and win a retained search with someone who's many years their senior, when they don't already have that pedigree. What's your experience of that?
Yeah, well, I can only speak from my own experience. I was 26, never had any business development experience. Went to Mark, did his training program, and kept building on that. So for me, my experience tells me it can be possible. And we've had other consultants do similar things. I do think you do need to put a lot of training into the junior talent, of course. I mean, they're junior, they're not going to understand all of the ways of how corporates work, how businesses work. But I think, creating that training plan, it does take work, but definitely I think it's possible. I think as well, you need to put a lot of work and effort into the recruitment process as well, which a lot of people are like, oh, let's hire three and two will leave. And I don't hire that way. It's like if you're going to make it in Ellis International, you've already passed through a very, in my opinion, challenging interview process. So I think that's a part of it. And really making sure you're hiring the right type of junior talent. It needs to be someone that's also very focused on quality, someone that's also very focused on understanding their market, becoming an expert. It's not about volume, that also wants to go to events. Wants to really, as we say, like become an expert in that market. And yeah, from my side, what I realized very early on, because I was, 26, as I was saying, is that actually, I think it came from Danny Cahill. We'll give him a shout out. I was doing his train, like his videos and stuff. And he said that, like, don't be intimidated by anyone that's more senior than you. Because you're the one that's on the phone all day, every day, and you know what candidates are available and you know how they react to that client. And even though they have 20 years of experience, they're not recruiters. And for some reason, that small feedback gave me like all the confidence in the world. I was like, he's right. I'm gonna start my own company. I'm gonna, sell my service. Of course, you have to be confident, but at 26, if you're confident and you really believe in that, that really gave me a kind of push to believe I could do it. And it is true. It's like at the end of the day, if they need a sales director in Germany and I'm the best option, then they'll give me a chance. But you need to actually believe that. And I feel that that's one of the biggest blockers. And probably Mark, from speaking with a lot of recruiters, like they just don't think they can sell retained search. It's not that they can't, it's more their own mindset than anything else.
Beautifully said. I couldn't agree more, Lauren. And Danny Cahill is terrific. And for sure, I think so. What you described is number one, you're putting people through their paces before you hire them. And because it has to be the right person. Not everybody is going to be able to do this, but for the right person, then it's totally possible. Even if they're selling to people or recruiting people who are, much more experienced and much more senior in terms of their job title or years of experience. The second thing you said was they have to have the right training in place. And that is, massive in terms of setting someone up for success and making sure that they are equipped to do the job. They have the skills and the knowledge. And then you also, the third point, which you just made, is that by the time you've spoken with, hundreds of candidates, which doesn't take long, right, in our business, like a few months, you've already, like that immersion, and assuming you're doing other things, you're attending industry events, you have to be a smart and curious person who absorbs information for sure. And you have to be a, confident communicator. But it does not take long before you do know what you're talking about, actually, and that you have a better insight on the market than the client does, because by virtue of you're speaking to, let's say, five people a day, 25 people a week, 100 people a month, you know what's going on in the marketplace, and you know how to attract talent, how to qualify, and you're also able to position the client and their opportunity in the right way. So, I think that makes more difference than how many years experience you have.
And I think the piece what you said about curiosity, definitely learning agility, they need to be the type of person, like we of course have books of, different recommendations, read this, et cetera. But also I expect them to go out and find books on their own. So that's the type of person, these things where like, they in the evenings research different things and they research different clients, different business models. It's that like learning agility and curiosity that's going to make someone successful. It's not necessarily their years of experience. And I would say even more with the rapid changes of today, I think it's even more important both for clients, for our industry, for every industry. It's like you can't only use the knowledge you had before because there are new tools, new ways of working, completely new jobs. I think, yeah, I heard recently, don't quote me on this, I don't know, but basically saying that like in 5 years, 80% of the jobs, no one knew about them today. So that just goes to show you that like the expert today is only the expert by how quickly they learn, if that makes sense. It's not the age-old years equals expertise anymore.
Absolutely. In fact, I've heard the expression, which I thought was a good one, that, someone could have 10 years experience on paper, but really they've got 1 year's experience repeated 10 times. If someone is not constantly learning and leveling up their game and adapting and improving, then that 10 years doesn't really mean a whole lot.
Yeah, true.
Fantastic. Lauren, is there anything else that I should have asked you that we've not covered today that you wanted to share?
Well, I did want to share, that our team is growing here at Ellis International. We have open positions. So if anyone has liked what we've discussed and could see themselves fitting in this type of company and company culture and ways of learning and innovating, please reach out to me.
Fantastic. And so, well, let's just touch on that, Lauren, briefly. What are your plans for expansion from here?
Yeah, so we have big plans for our mentoring program. As I said, it's gone very, very well. And I think it's a really great product that both mentee, mentor, the companies are benefiting from. So we're definitely going to be growing out that arm of the business called LS Elevate. In terms of LS exec search, you know, we're looking for individuals that want to grow in other areas of CPG and retail, other functions, so supply chain, finance, HR, and really looking for people to come on board and help us set up those other practices within the business.
It's interesting. So you personally have tended to focus on like the commercial roles, kind of marketing and sales and that sort of thing. So you're going to keep the vertical market focus on CPG and retail, but you're going to, as you grow the business, you'll add other functions.
Yes.
Is that correct. The idea?
Correct.
Fantastic. Okay. Lauren, it's a pleasure speaking to you as always. So thank you very much for making the time for this today.
Yeah. Thank you, Mark.